the huge disconnect from practical dignity, lived. I live, eat, breathe the violence of moving by foot as a pedestrian or on a wheelchair in this time. I eat it. I eat your exhaust pipes. I eat your speed. I eat the crumbs of what you've given me on this no bench bus shelter in the middle of a thunderstorm.
Hello and welcome to Decolonize Everything. My name is Rebecca Mendoza-Nunziato, your host and conversation partner. On this show, we start the conversation about decolonization. We're disrupting the status quo by supporting new consciousness and liberation through practical tips and radical ideas. Well, I will formally welcome you, Jonathan Stalls, to the podcast. Thanks for being here.
Oh, I'm honored to be here with you. Thank you.
Ah, oh, such a gift. Well, you know, introductions. What would you like people to know about you?
I spend a lot of time walking and moving by foot. So today I was out doing a lot of that around some of my creative work. I have this artistic project of sorts that is just imperfect experimenting around creativity and walking culture, pedestrian dignity, and it's called Intrinsic Paths. I just care so much about the essence of what that invitation is of intrinsic, like what is within each of us naturally already, and just the humble, imperfect fumbling around it all. So
I love it.
There's that.
Yes. And you know this about me, and this is one of the fun things about bringing you here, is that walking is like a complicated yes. term for me. Totally. But also, like, when you say you walk a lot, like, I think we should say more about what that really means.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it truly is. It's my greatest teacher in terms of moving by foot or on wheelchair, stroller. I mean, I don't move on a stroller or a powered wheelchair, but I see and witness a lot of our built environment because it's my primary form of transportation. And it is, so it is everything from a mental health practice that helps me to clear and ground and kind of comb out what's heavy and stressful, but it's also very practical to get to places for food, for gatherings, for things that I'm needing. So that in relationship to transit, I'm in the city of Denver, so there's transit at least roughly. Yeah. Roughly.
Asterisk.
Yeah, asterisk. And so I guess that it really depends on the route, but a lot of it is within feet or inches of high speed traffic all the time, constant exhaust pipes, noise, hurried culture, and also times under trees and in parks, times alongside a host of stories and people who move between the walls and screens by foot or by wheelchair. So it is a mix of things, and that, you know, so my relationship to it is very it's precious, it's mm-hmm. complex, it can feel even aggressive at times, it can feel violent at times, yeah. But there's this, like, it's like body-based education every day. Right. Maybe a background story, just one small one, is I'm LGBTQIA+, and walking across the U.S., I moved for 242 days in 2010 as in its deepest place as a survival journey for me. Mm-hmm. This was a walk to move into my own love of self, essentially. I was beaten down in my own limited, unique, imperfect frame of white supremacy, that this is what it is to be a man, a white man, this is, and anything that is sensitive or queer or color, extra colorful or artistic needs to be buried deep, because that is not acceptable by family, by outskirts, by society, by whatever. So bury it. And conform. Mm-hmm. And so in my 20s, it drove me to the point of several almost suicide attempts. And I was standing on the edge of a small highway, and my approach at the time was just, I'm just gonna step in front of a truck, because it's too, I cannot honor what's going on inside of me in an authentic way, and I can't also fit into this box, and so it's just, it's easier. So that walk for me was just literally walking into my own sense of healing and empowerment and love of self. And I wanted to rearrange any education I got that felt false and disconnected from people in my life who looked differently than me, who had different lives than me, who believed different things, who voted differently, whatever it was that I had grown up with and defined as different. I wanted all of my limited education, colonial education, I wanted to remove that in a sense, and walk with humility for 242 days and just listen to the earth and to people, but from that place of survival and surviving my own kind of what, like heteronormative, like that, the relationship that I find to be so, so tightly tied to colonialism is the both the speed of transportation. So I'm working on this writing project, and one of the chapters is walking and or unhurried movement as resistance to speed.
Ooh.
And so this like, so, and what branches out of the speed is, it's just what happens is there then becomes this quiet permission that I find, and I would imagine others might connect to this, but just this quiet permission to bypass people, earth, self. And so when we can every day, and we have people at the top who mostly represent a colonized, like white male framework, building environments so people can maintain a bypassing culture, then we are quietly, complicitly playing into this network of bypassing each other's stories, each other's needs, the cry of the planet, and like the pipelines and the yes. desperation of limited resources and oil and extraction. And so then the other thing that ties to that, which to me is so related to the relationship of like colonization and transportation, is the extraction relationship. So, you know, so it's bypassing, it's speed, but then it's also I'm building my life and with expectation and transactional, time is a transaction. And so I need to get here by here. I need to do this by this. I need to have a controlled calendar. I need to control my time. And so if we're controlling our time, then how much easier are we going to think we have the audacity or the moral authority to control other people, to control the earth for our use, to control other people for our use.
Mm-hmm. The consumption.
The
energy.
Consumption, yeah. Friend. Oh, so it's just that I say all that with messiness, and there's just a lot of gaps in those words, but it's the aches around your question.
But it's so, I mean, like I feel it. I feel it in my body, because it's your resistance and your way of seeing the world is something that's hard for me to access because I drive my car everywhere I go. Yeah. And I, you know, I remember at the beginning of COVID, you know, everyone was going on walks. Mm-hmm. That was like a thing for a little bit. And maybe it's still a thing. I don't know.
Right, right.
And for the first time, people were also going on walks mostly in their neighborhood.
Yeah.
And I live on West Colfax, Colfax and Sheridan.
Yep.
And I remember feeling like, it's not safe to walk here. Like the car, like people die on the street, crossing the street where I live.
Yep.
Regularly.
Yep.
And moving to that space and starting to pay attention to that made me realize, like, yeah, like you said, this is built against the pedestrian.
Right.
Like the pedestrian is always at risk.
Yep.
The cyclist is always at risk. Like there's no invitation to put my feet on the ground.
Right. Right.
And to breathe this air and like where I live, like to learn these streets, to learn my neighbors, to learn, you know, this park, like that it's stacked against me. And it was, and I think I love that idea of like this permission to bypass people. I also remember when I first moved to Denver, you know, I hadn't been in an urban environment in a while.
Yeah.
And I just remember seeing all of our unhoused neighbors kind of just everywhere. Mm. And thinking, like, how do people drive by this every day? Like, is this not an affront to, like, our humanity, like, our shared humanity? But sure enough, over time, I do am driving by every person, you know? And like, I feel like we don't even understand the humanity within the car. Like, it's almost like the car functions as machine and we forget there's humans in them until like there's an accident or until, you know, and even then, right? Like, it's, I'm sorry, I'm just rambling about cars because I've just been so like awakened a lot by your work and just by like trying to pay attention to like the ways that we practice a lot of violence in our transportation.
It's like the environment, and so much is orchestrated to keep, if you can, and to see the vehicle as, this is how I'm going to make ends meet. This is how I'm going to survive. This is how I'm going to get to the places I need to go. So it's such a, it, that, like the equity and the systemic racism, systemic classism stuff is so thick, and it's so orchestrated to maintain. And I think about strip malls and parking lots so that we don't want any, like, we're going to make sure people stay close to the transaction of consumption. Mm-hmm. So by no parks, no public restrooms, no transit's going to be real limited, like crumbs, no shelters, no, like, we're just going to make, we're going to make the human body dependent on quick parking consumption. Mm-hmm. And so then all the things that, oh my God, all that gets lost in that.
Well, and I was going to say, you said kind of this idea of, I'm going to get by through a car, but also the ways that cars hold us captive through being expensive, through being, you know, like needing maintenance, through like, you can't get a job if you don't have a car. Like, they you check the box.
Literally.
Like, do you have a car to get to work?
Yes, right.
And yeah, and so I find it so radical when I see a picture of you sitting under an overpass.
Yeah.
And it must feel radical. Yeah, can you describe like what that feels like to be in places that are actively trying to prohibit your existence as a human body there? Like, what is that like?
That question, friend. So it is, it's all the above. I have, it's why I just, like, there, it's every emotion under the sun. There's a chosen, there's something about choosing to be out there where there's this privileged observer that is a tricky place sometimes when it comes to just equity and systems. And that I think just there's that there's a humility in that place where I just have, like, I'm you know, like so many times under these underpasses, there's other people who are without a home or in transition. And there's connection and community. I mean, that photo you're talking about, there was someone down there doing a WhatsApp call with his mother in Canada with his homeless cart and little like Chihuahua dog all behind underneath that same overpass next to the highway. And there was this really, really intimate connection. And our circumstances are so different. And yet, to that humanness question, like that raw human body moving as it's made, as like its inherent state, the upright posture, the way our bodies are, like the relationship to the wind in the sky, the relationship to the central brain and moving bilaterally so we can process heavy things, the proximity to people who are different than we are, the trees and the smells and the discernment, the evolution, all these things that are literally and so quickly commodified and paved over for the bottom line, for speed, for progress, for survival inside of that system. And it's devastating. It's at like it to the point where I want to light stuff on fire because I'm so angry and risk my life and people liking me, and this, like, I just get so fired up around the horror of how much has been taken from what is human to extract. And I always tie it back to this westward, like, we're gonna come in here and we're gonna take, it's all about the gold. Forget your water springs in Manitou. Forget the things that actually like brought these tribal nations to, and I don't want to, but it's just this, it's like taking at all costs.
You know, you kind of mentioned the idea of being a white man speaking about colonization, but the like we're tied, right? Like we're all tied to this. And it's one of the hardest things about any conversation that's ultimately about like larger healing is that it, you know, we get pitted in these places against each other. And it's like, no, urban designer, like urban planner, like this is for you too.
Yes.
Like this is not good for us. And yeah, I know it sounds righteous and preachy sometimes. I know for me, when I say it, I'm like, oh, it's like cringy a little bit. But but it's because it's because of love and like this ultimate vision.
Yeah.
And especially for me in the decolonial space, it's like, man, we had some wisdom that has been lost and has been kind of sneaky. You know, like we have sneaky wisdom that has survived our ancient lineages and like our, our people, you know. And so when I think about my own journey towards getting into my body more, paying attention to the earth more, like feeling connected, you could say. It is about like, man, before the world taught me that learning is just through my brain and kind of rote memorization and getting a grade.
Oh my gosh.
You know, before like I was taught that like, you know, avoid pain by like intellectualizing it, before all those things were like instilled into me, there's some primal way of just showing up in the earth.
Yes.
And what's always tricky about it too for me is like it's not luscious and like nature's not just kind of this like magical home. It is, but it's also it's a place of struggle too.
Yes.
But it's a connected struggle. Yes. And right now I feel so disconnected in my struggle that that's where I look to the spider that's like building a web when it's on my driveway and like the crazy little earwig families that are exploring under the RV, which, side note, did you know that they're maternal insects?
Really?
Earwigs.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Anyways.
See? So, earwigs.
Earwigs.
So good.
They were getting a little bothersome, so I decided to do some research into their fine qualities.
That is amazing.
But like all this to say, like there's we are connected. We are connected. And I'm curious like how you even see your walking and movement as a part of like an ancient path or like an ancient wisdom.
Yeah. There's so much there. I think the word that comes up, the two words that come up are relationship and proximity. Just being in this place where you can more easily, more naturally, like go into relationship with, like, and that's not just like, I'm not talking just romantic relationships or friendships or just, but this like relationship ultimately being like connection with like, it, like, but more than just like a transactional connection, like a relational connection, like
mutuality,
like just what you were saying, like at some, in some like universal matrix of magical, like beyond what our eyes can see, you and this earwig, me and this fern, me and the sunrise, you and the rippling creek, me and the wind, you and the mature oak tree, me and the crows, and you and the doves. It's like there's this, there is this mutuality. How could there not be?
Yeah.
And I, that to be conditioned or to be brought up in or to be like in these arrangements of separation from that, like the separation. So then it's so to that, like what, how for walking and human unhurried movement, you know, just that, that realm of being a human body, moving the way it's made to move.
Yeah.
That it's like this
in a world that is alive,
in a world that is alive and evolving and emerging and adapting and is resilient. You see these trees that are like the branch is like, okay, I get that a lot of the trees are out here like doing the straight and narrow thing, and I and it's cool. You all got your sun and your water and your dew. You're all looking, but my arm's about to break off, and I'm gonna let it, and then I'm gonna grow another arm, and it's gonna twist out in up inside itself, and then I'm gonna and do you see what it looks like, and do you see the kind of oxygen I'm able to get because I'm twisting and surviving and adapt? Oh my God, right. Nature just has so much, and so like, what separates me, us, children, elders? What is literally physically separating us, energetically separating us from those, that kind of lineage wisdom, that earth wisdom, the like walls and automobiles and huge paved streets that make it impossible for the elders to cross or sit anywhere outside to be connected to kids playing in the park. Like the devastation to older adults and to our elders is horrific. It's absolutely horrific that we have made aging in this time related to how we build our environments and pave over any soft, tender, nurturing sense of place for older adults to not only influence culture, but to be nourished by the like natural witnessing of blossoming children.
I'm going to press into this a little bit. So one thing that, you know, is always sort of right here in front of my face whenever I think about consumption and things is this kind of ownership energy that I do think comes from very colonial kind of settler Christianity of like, we are here to dominate. We are here to exercise power. And of course, not that this doesn't apply to other religions or other institutions, but it's one that I think we both experienced very personally in the way that it continues into modern reality, right? And I think of, you know, oh, there's so many places my brain can go, but I think specifically I want to talk a little bit about how spirituality itself, mostly housed as religion, has been colonized into the consumption framework. And somehow people find themselves in a religious space where they're disconnected. And like, I was there. I'm still struggling every day to not be in that disconnected space. And the struggle is funny because in some ways it's just a letting go, right? And it's just a being. Like, it's just like, no, I am connected. I just have been pushing that away for some reason. So how do you think about, like, I mean, it's flowing through everything you're saying, but how do you think about, like, spirituality as a way of being connected and moving through the world and paying attention to the sentience of all that is around us?
I think my most genuine ache around that, and this is just from that story of survival when I was kind of at my own edge, when I slowly started walking in 2010, I was maybe 2 or 3 weeks into the walk, and I was going down into this, I was starting to walk along the CNO Canal path, which is along the Potomac River on the Maryland and Virginia border. And it was in those moments where it started to just like spirit, God, anything that I had ever categorized or had been told was, or had tried to push into, or had whatever I was brought up with. I literally, it was just this very, like, the river itself, the way it flowed and the way it even flooded. So to your point of nature also being violent and not all like peaceful retreat, it's like, no, this thing's about to flood and I'm going to get, like, my dog and I are going to die. And we only lasted 3 weeks on this thing. Like, literally we're terrified.
Nature can be very scary.
Yes. So it's like real life nature. And, but it was in those days where there was so much resilience in literally kind of sitting and hanging onto a log, the water's rushing around us. I'm holding my dog because he's getting soaked and freaking out. The evening after we got out of that, it just became so clear that any of my previous frameworks, these things that were so oppressive and limiting and boxed and transactional, in the moment with that river, it became this relationship between me and the river that was dynamic and intense and deep and profound. And so then from there in the next, I just remember, you know, like my relationship to the night sky when I would sleep, my relationship to the trees, going back to when I was on the edge of that road, and I was about to, you know, end my life because of this, a lot of this stuff. Like, I remember looking up at the trees and the wind was brushing the trees. And at that point, I was a part of, this non-denominational Christian thing where it was just the whole savior stuff, all that. And I never fully, like, in my guts of guts, for as long as I've been alive, have never fully, like, I just was always like, oh, well, it feels good temporarily with this group and singing and candles and things. And okay, so, all right, I'm here for it because it feels good right now in this moment, but not fully. And ultimately, with those trees blowing when I was at my own edge, the river rushing around my dog and I, and the fragility of surviving that, and the ongoing relationship to people and the belovedness of people that I would approach by foot or walk alongside, the belovedness of trees and sky, because I made the time to connect. And I didn't have money going into this. I had $1,000 in my account. I was trusting that things would work out. I knew that I needed to throw myself into the unknown of it all. And so that essence of spirituality, of it, just what happened for me is it affirmed, at least for me, like, it just blew everything limited out.
Oof.
It just blew it out.
Yes.
Entirely, like, without question, like, it just out the walls from my own being. It is expansive. It is, there's this expansive, humble, listening, open existence. And with that, like, a reverence for rooted, for people who became and are in my relationships and my midst, who have rooted traditions that aren't oppressive and colonizing and extractive, that passionately, like, there's so much reverence and humility around just learning and witnessing. And for me, it's just, so I don't know, like, it, like you said, it's imperfect. It's a forever journey. It's, there's no arriving anywhere. And it's just anything that feels, that has limitation and that feels boxed and oppressive is so, has been blown out of my being, friend.
Oof. It's, I mean,
blown all the way out.
It's so beautiful. Like, that's liberation.
Oh.
That freedom story, that story of survival and struggle and freedom and trust is, like, the spiritual path. So many people have been told these deep messages that bind us to the system. I mean, really, to the system, like, to being reliant on everything from, like, the priest to the car. You know, like, it's the same. It's the same. What can we learn? How can we show up to life and death and struggle and violence and beauty and it all belong? You know, like, how can it belong that you're, like, in a river with a dog, with the wind, and just, like, yeah, I think sometimes we just have such narrow views. And again, that is that colonial, like, good, bad, right, wrong duality and dualism that just can feel so limiting. It's, and part of it's the mystery.
Right. Yeah. And to your point, like, and releasing any need to know or to have the authority of understanding on that thing. And so and that's where, like, the humility, like, the return to humility is always so important for me. Yeah. The return to imperfection, the return to fumbling ass, just like, I don't know what I'm doing when I'm walking on these highways. I don't know what I'm doing when I'm just, and yet also I know exactly what I'm doing. So it's just, I don't know what I don't, oh wait, but I'm listening and I'm on, but I don't know what it's just this.
Yeah.
And to, like, there is a field and I am forever probably going to be, wrestling, but also, finding nourishment in this field. But this, like, you know, this space where I can then, like, because, my own, like that boxed up limitation journey, like, it's blasted out, as I said earlier, it's literally blasted. Like, but because it feels expansive and, like, to your point earlier, loving, like, there's a loving nature to it. Like, it's for the sake of love. It's for the sake of genuine, like, healing and movement and loving who we are and loving others better and listening and loving on this planet. Like, mm-hmm. it's from that fountain. And so from that expansive place, then there's a reframed relationship to Jesus. It's a reframed relationship to Buddha. It's a reframed relationship to these characters of religion that where I no longer am threatened. It's more a curiosity and an openness and a more genuine listening. So I love the term undefended as just an invitation, because I think it's just not as a place of arrival, because I am not there, probably will never fully be there, but like the practice of being undefended when it comes to that kind of spiritual space and some of these things, not necessarily being of a defensive spirit for people that I care about, fight for, want to just honor, but like this place of in my own being when it comes to threatening my own worthiness. Where is invitation for being undefended? And
ooh, that's good work. Ooh. That's good work.
Yeah.
That's hard work.
Hard.
When you, so you, it sounded like you were alluding a little bit to advocacy and kind of the way that we think about defense, I guess.
Sure.
You could say, like,
yeah.
caring for as a yeah. defense or as an advocate or as mm-hmm. a friend or even that mutuality piece, right?
Yep.
Like that we're tied up together.
Yes.
So when you think about transportation and unhurried movement, how do you kind of blend that in with pedestrian dignity?
Yeah. So I just keep, so I've been feeling the need. So when I finished the cross country walk, it was just such a body based ground up, from the bottom of my feet up to my guts, education in urban planning, land use, systemic racism and classism and how neighborhoods have been built, where people, land ownership, redlining, yeah. all these things that are so, when you see it in consistently all across the country. So, and walking through it and literally like, so there's all of, and the, you know, the way the highways and then how these practical trips are separated so far out from where people live, and then the access to them, and then looking at public housing and people who potentially have a significant percentage of folks who depend on and cannot drive, who depend on walking or using a wheelchair, and the complexity of what just is horrific, violent, and unsafe to get to practical trips. But then those with the time and the luxuries to advocate and push their voice, or with just agendas running from the top down to have more wealthy neighborhoods with nicer sidewalks, nicer bus stops, nicer amenities, walkable community. I mean, all the huge disconnect from practical dignity lived. I live, eat, breathe the violence of moving by foot as a pedestrian or on a wheelchair in this time. I eat it. I eat your exhaust pipes. I eat your speed. I eat the crumbs of what you've given me on this no bench bus shelter in the middle of a thunderstorm. I'm eating it with my body as I hold groceries. I'm eating it as I try and as I'm resettled here as a refugee, and all I know is walking and moving by foot, and I'm trying to get my feet on the ground, and all I have as an environment is getting splashed by SUVs every time I'm getting back from, like, to have so much body-based experiential proximity to those exchanges day in and day out. It just became, after the cross-country walk, I experimented a lot with community walking programs as a way of people connecting with each other shoulder to shoulder, and I love that, care a lot about it. That was through Walk to Connect. But even through that, the dignity realm of how violent it just stacked in my body around how violent this all is. And the more with Walk to Connect, we would work in public housing and we do all these relationships. It's relationship. It's relationship with so many people with this lived reality. And the pedestrian dignity campaign just became so, like, that just became an evolution of, like, okay, how do I want to organize myself around accountability to my own creative work and my own blazing imperfection around trying to be someone that moves story and awareness around what it is like from this vantage point. And that, because that's where I feel like it's where I feel connected the most. And so, and then tying that to and connecting that to policy changes, people working on things inside of the house. And mm-hmm. I for many years I tried to sit on committees and work on, and the my impatience, y'all, was not,
you're not built,
I'm
for
not
that.
Built to be in this room thinking about whether or not, with our legs crossed, if we can at least for a moment consider whether or not this is an issue or an important removal of crumbs in this huge car-centric transportation budget. Ugh. Whether or not maybe the bus stops should get, I cannot be in this. I have got to be out moving, telling stories with love, with nurturing,
with the intensity.
We let's believe the best in each other, and I'm gonna make you a little uncomfortable. Because I cannot sit in this room around this consideration culture.
Oh, and you know, it's interesting because there's this, you're talking about unhurried, and over here it's the apathy. Like, you know, from an outsider, I might be like, oh, they're, you know, they're not in a hurry. And it's like, no, this is like indifference, apathy, a lack of connection to what's really like.
Yes.
Have they ridden a bus?
Yeah.
Have they walked in these spots that we're discussing the budget?
Friend. That's right. That. Yeah. It's the essence of, have you, before you are hired, paid $100,000 a year to be a planner in this, before you put a city plan together, is your team, is your group, is your collective walking, moving, and in genuine, not just 1 or 2 6 p.m. like feedback meetings that are 2 hours with maybe sort of kind of dinner provided, but not really. And then they check all these boxes if they can make it. And that's the checkoff box for community engagement. Can't do it. Won't do it. And I and just trying, and I'm always like pinging back to myself, and it feels very like colonial, but like the ping back of, well, Jonathan, that's not you're not effective though. Your storytelling and it's not effective. How many people are engaging? How many people are out there? And it's just, I just have to keep going back to my genuine aches. Like I would rather be honoring how I can genuinely move where I feel the aching and my role within it than sitting in spaces that I'm just not built to sit in. And some people are, like, I know some people who are doing amazing things inside of these meetings and inside of policy and inside of the house. And so I commend them, because we need courageous, human dignity centered people in these spaces who are willing to risk their salary, their reputation, their likability, who are willing to be, I just keep thinking of James Baldwin's The Fire Next Time. Like, I reread that just a month or two ago, and he speaks specifically of white people in particular, but like just this, it's something related to being spineless. And so that term of spineless, it's like the spinelessness of it, where we're just not, you know, bold and courageous in our aches and our intuitive injustice energy. So anyway, I know I'm all over the place with that, but it is,
folks like you have, I think, really modeled for me the role of the disruptor, because no, I'm serious, and I'm more and more like, oh no, this is like, in many ways, this is where I belong, because being, you know, in many ways the token person in a lot of institutions, yes, there's good work that happens there. There's important things that happen there. But there's also so much erasure. There's also so much silencing. There's also so much bullshitting around, like, a quote-unquote dinner, like, in a nice building with air conditioning and, you know, like, the elite. Like, what?
Right.
Like, if you think this is how we're going to solve the problems, like, this is what created the problems, is that we are so content with the colonial systems that we've built and that we've existed in, and because the folks making the decision are served by those realities, right? Like you said, whether it's the salary, whether it's the big businesses coming into the city, whatever, the automobile, like the tech, whatever it is, like, I think we need, especially at this moment, more folks who are angry and tired of the same old, same old, and who are unsatisfied by the checking of the box by community engagement. Yes. In the course of 1 week, it was just 1 week, I had a friend who was hit by a car when she was cycling home. And then the following, just a few days after that, there was a car accident in front of my house. A day after that, when I was protesting with Black Lives Matter, a car sped through the intersection and I had to jump out of the way. And then the following evening, I saw a dog hit by a car who then died on the road. All these things, you know, I think had they happened to me spaced out sufficiently, I wouldn't have connected the dots. But I started to connect the dots of what you're saying about the way that our speed is violence and the way that our transportation is violence and the way that we ultimately are so individualized and so, you know, self-centric in the way that we move through the world. It's instructive. It's pain that was really instructive for me. And when I walked away from the dog, I just remember thinking like, wow, so many lives of so many kinds have been lost on Colfax in front of where I live. And we don't know how to deal with that. We don't know how to usher the life out. We don't know how to honor the life lost. We don't know how to name the violence. And I think the hard thing with this is it's so status quo. It's so society we don't know how to even own it, and we don't know how to even address it.
Thank you for just sharing that's like those stories and the way I keep hearing your, like, we don't even know, like, the ushering, the honoring, the ushering, like you said, of the loss or the like, how to be a fabric of people that are more nurturing, right? I keep going back to Adrienne Marie Brown's book, Emergent Strategy, like a nurturing culture, or community, way of being, and a anti-nurturing culture, way of being, and kind of how she breaks that down in that book. But it's like this, to not even know how we usher that in and out and through and all these things. And
Well, and you know, you Google like what to do, dog hit by car. Not that this is the approach to take, but if you were to do that, like, call the Humane Society, call the animal shelter, pick up the body, move it out of the way, right? So we can keep speeding through lane. So we can. What to do when a person gets hit by a car? Call 911. Like, it's all about, like, we're trying.
Yeah.
We create these institutional interventions to distance us from our connectedness.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Can you say that again for those? From my inner voices and self.
If I can get it right. I mean, we create these institutional interventions to distance ourselves from our connectedness. Yes. Pressing into it, like sitting with the dog, like sitting at the scene of death and suffering. Like we need tools for that. We need some commitment to it because it's so freaking uncomfortable. Like, no, I do not want to watch any of this happen. No, I do not want to read the news reports of how many people have died in front of my house and on my block. And
yeah, the tools piece. And I just even envision, you know, like, just like you lighting a candle for our session tonight, like, to just be of a way that when the dog passes, that you just get a candle and you're lighting a candle for this being that's like the spirit, like these places of energy that we just start to integrate. One of the things I share a lot in some of the spaces I'm in is like just this. I mean, I'm always carrying around, you know, I always walk around with a different variety of walking sticks, but also like rocks in my backpack. And anytime I'm in certain meetings, sometimes I'll just lay the rocks out on the table just because I'm like, I want more natural elements to like, and sometimes people look at me weird and other times I just say it. I'm like, I want to just, I'm bringing these here so that we can hold a little bit of mystery in whatever we're trying to move in this maybe transactional conversation about who, what should be in this, like whatever we're trying to, whatever we're meeting about and however we honor each other in our gathering, like what elements, for the last week and a half, I've been working on these writing pieces related to this thing I've got that's called Ways of Walking. Mm-hmm. And it's this, it's basically just tools and practices related to 12 different themes that is like that hopefully are just invitations around how to practically try on, you know, like just a stance of like walking as resistance to speed, or walking as human dignity, or walking as vulnerability. Like I want to imagine like I have a relationship or someone I'm in conflict with or in disagreement with. How can I better trust or try a walking or rolling relationship to how I move into that conflict, move into that tension and conversation, thus inviting movement, moving bodies who are moving forward together, physiological side-by-sideness underneath our true ceiling that's expansive and mysterious, under and alongside trees that keep us breathing and fragile, like these elements that will, without words, assist us in our conflict instead of just the default of let's have coffee and sit across the table, or let's sit at the dinner, or let me just lash out at you in the moment
while
you hold still and are shocked by my lashing out. Or why don't, like, doesn't mean we're all messy and perfect. We all have places where this is going to rub edges, but the tools, how bold underlined, how are we, you know, honoring. And so I think to a lot of our conversation on pedestrian dignity and advocacy, like one of the things I'm always just encouraging, whether you like, if your primary form of transportation is walking or rolling on a wheelchair, if it's, or even if it's driving and you have, and you're choosing to rearrange your relationship, you know, just this, like the tool of how my eye, either by myself or if I'm not comfortable, because that's real, right? What you brought up, women walking out by themselves, black folks, mm-hmm. people who are literally being targeted mm-hmm. by mm-hmm. systems and by so much of this, like so much power dynamic, messy, unhealed time. And so this, so how to invite a friend, how to have backup, how to do it as a group, how to have accountability, how to have, but to like treat it like, you know, so many of us would spend a lot of time applying for a project or working on a vacation and all the details for that, or what's my menu for dinner?
The intention
to treat your transportation relationship like a beloved invitation of rearranged pieces, that if it has to just be, you know what, I'm no longer, or I'm going to try mm-hmm. to not leave my house in my car and drive all the way to the front door of wherever I'm going. Mm. I'll park it at home and then drive it. I'll get used to a 1 or 2 mile radius around where I'm going and start to.
Ooh, that's good training, since we have transit that leaves you a mile away from wherever you're going.
Right, exactly.
Like that last mile problem.
Can we talk about that? Oh, for real. I know. Yeah, get that going.
I'm a big advocate for therapy. Therapy is my friend. Like, counseling, spiritual guidance, all those things are my friend. But I have friends outside and my, like, outdoors that, like you said, the trees are here to assist us. And I even think, like, healing from trauma,
oh
working through our pain. And you talked about that tree early on with its arm twisting and breaking.
Ooh.
Like, I need to see that because that speaks to me. I need to see the tree that runs into the brick building and then finds a way to, you know, move through it and interact with it and bust through the sidewalk.
Friend.
Oof.
Those trees. Yeah. That, and it, oh, so much of that. I just, and the physiological, like, one of the things I share as often as I can is the, like, what actually happens in central brain when we move by foot.
Ooh,
like,
say a little bit about
so
that.
So if the EMDR treatment, if you've heard of EMDR, trauma and emotional healing stuff, like, that's, it's connected, hypnosis is connected to the same workings, but it's this, basically, if you imagine a like the body naturally, what is in, and there's so much research, different opinions, all these different branches of who thinks what, and just in my own life and in the life of so many people I know, it's this like within 20 minutes, within even 10 minutes in some ways, it's the bilateral scanning of your environment. So your eyes, as you walk, you're bilaterally scanning naturally to just know where you're going to step, who's around, you're all these things are happening. There's forces inside of us that are constantly talking to the core of the earth and through gravity. I'm forgetting the scientific term right now, but there's this whole system that's talking to the center of the earth that's keeping us upright, or if we're on a wheelchair, still connected to our center of gravity. And then our arms and our legs are swinging bilaterally. So all of this is working to release where we and how we store trauma and heaviness and stress and emotional weight. Like it literally is how we have evolved as a human species for so long through so much to be able to, that our brains and our chemistry and our physiology, our nervous system, all these things are working together to help us move with and release what wants to break us apart and break us down. And so the literal violence of not being able to more naturally be of a way that is human healing in and of itself.
Right.
Right. Like you said,
like
not
we have the tools.
We have the tools.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I think one thing to kind of add to that is the way that it can be healing for us, but it can also be solidarity, which you've expressed through your stories and your experiences. I just keep thinking of like the Trail of Tears and kind of forced movement The way that even right now, like our brothers and sisters are seeking asylum or seeking family and moving across places in really violent and hard ways.
Yeah.
And in moments where I don't want to walk because of whatever I carry around walking in my own body and movement, you know, I try to think of the ways that our bodies, we share that collective story of movement. You know, like I know one thing for sure, and that's the times that I've been most in my own trauma and pain, and holding still was not the answer.
Yes.
Like, you know, sometimes we hold still evolutionarily to keep us safe. I've done that.
Totally.
I have been frozen and it has kept me safe.
Yep.
But after that, after that actual threat has passed, I have to move my body. Mm. And just saying that out loud is like, gosh, I don't remember that. Like you know, I sit there with my phone and my body just folds in on itself. And I remember when you were one of few people out during the snowpocalypse, the cyclone,
bomb cyclone.
Is that what it's called?
That's
none of the words sound real, so I'm just going to throw it out there, like a tornado
bomb
of
cyclone.
Ice tornado grand
gosh,
finale.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, you were out there in the weather.
Yeah. Mm.
Talk to me a little bit about even that specific experience, or just in general, like to be unsheltered.
Oh my gosh. That is so, it's like the there's so much there in the essence of like these terms, and it's just, you know, these terms of grief and praise that I come into like a lot as these two like forces that are always like, I don't know, just moving my journey, but like the grief of dignity and like you said, in solidarity of like the masses of the populations, people, just however many the categories of people, the individual people, the children, all the different relationships of human bodies that are out in those elements, like literally surviving. And terrified and at complete mercy of what, and so add to that bomb cyclone, people trying to survive, and then the visibility of not seeing cars trying to get home, race through or get home. Like, so you've got add the violence of automobiles and the tension of people having to wait for the car to cross the street. Whoa. Right? Like, you, so there's just so much there around this. The storms make it so tangible how much grief I think we all carry around, not only the fragility of the human body, but just the systems at which there are so many of us who are forced or out into these elements without an option. And so to that, like, so that proximity to that, as however we interact with it, whatever our proximity is to that, we will, through our bodies, like, will feel like your RV. Like, it's just my proximity to this is closer. Oh my God, I could only imagine. Like, it's on your radar because your proximity to it is, wow, I'm feeling this. How could I not? And who's out there? And how are my public dollars? How are these systems, if we are in these systems, making it so those in our midst are at least relieved or have places to rest and hide or be safe from. And the violence of so much private property. Don't use the bathroom here. This is it's bottom line only. Mm-hmm. Like, how can I not? I don't want to mess with, I don't want to clean this up. You are dirty. Yes. You are dangerous. You're not my problem to solve. Mm. So the justification for so much human separation, and then it just a bomb cyclone, and you're just all like, oh my gosh. And the more proximity one has to it, the more alive it is. And so with that, the praise, I would even, like, I say praise loosely, but I just say, like, what can be learned in our own humility journey, in our own, like you were saying earlier, relationship to ushering death and transition, and just, we don't know. Mystery. Yeah. Like, this bomb cyclone change, could have me up mystery. In the air, slammed up in that electricity pole like a fork.
Done.
I could be flattened. That's I could true. Be like this rainstorm, lightning. We're like that. Yeah. That like yeah. at what? And so the invitation, not that we were like out like commodifying our capacity to be like chasing disasters, but like, because that's
yeah,
just
this is not
this
storm,
is not storm chasing. But it's this, like, without that wisdom, what stories, what false stories, I would say, start to take shape around our ability to control our climate, our environment, and what and who gets hurt and what gets excavated unnecessarily to keep us in this perceived idea of control.
Yes. Yeah. Right. And yeah, without the proximity of these moments of violence with the cars that I described, without the proximity of being in a very barely insulated recreational vehicle as my home, you know, without the experience of being in that underpass, like, with it's an invitation, I think, just to expand our vision, our wisdom, and to find that there are people there, right? There are people living in their cars. There are people living under overpasses. There are people trudging through the snow. There are people killed by freezing to death in our city, you know, sleeping outside. There are people killed by the heat of the desert crossing our border, whatever the fuck a border is. And, you know, it's that, and ultimately I think that is the healing work, is to be present.
Yeah. And it's why, and again, it's so imperfect. It's just why, though, with intrinsic paths, with what I'm just experimenting with, with fumbling, it's this, like, it's why every, like, I'm always approaching it as a way of being. This isn't a program. This isn't something that I'm just signing up for because the salary's nice. This isn't something, I'm not going to all of a sudden become a community advocate for this because the job first. Like, and again, this is, there's grace. I'm not trying to judge y'all. I just, to the spirit of nurturing each other more wholeheartedly, honoring a more human way with how we move through our lives, like that how we, like, just evolve around can this be a way of being? Can our human journey be of a way it's trying with all that it can to integrate these things and not separate them or categorize them or have them just be when I show up here, when I do this or when it's convenient, but like, I'm just, how can I be of a way where I'm less attached to a colonial consumptive transaction narrative and not just narrative, and with my doing, my resources, my unroomed bedrooms in my house, my savings account, all these ideas of what is mine and not yours. How is this, what can we possibly envision with tapping into Baldwin's advice of being less spineless? Like this, how can we radically, with love and self-compassion, like move into a way of being that is just more, that is more human, more human.
Thank you so much. This was such a gift. Okay, I guess we have to stop. I guess I should stop recording.
I love
Thank
it.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Yes.
So, thank you, Jonathan, for joining us. Thank you, listeners, community, for being a part of this virtual listening circle. And I hope you'll follow and subscribe, listen, rate, review. Do what you gotta do. We're at Decolonize Podcast on Facebook and Instagram, and Decolonize Pod on Twitter. I'm Rebecca Mendoza Nunziato, your host and friend. Let's decolonize everything together.